Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain. As you can see, we're going to be talking a bit about the future of Chicago and the cultural center that this city is in a very new way coming up. But first of all, thanks for joining us. As you know, we are here on the WGN Plus live stream every Saturday at 10:30 and 4:30 p.m. following Mike Toomey's great Laugh Tracks show, What a Lead-In, and on Sundays at 4 p.m. Joining me this morning is Lou Raisin. He is the president and CEO of Broadway in Chicago. And I can't tell you that here's a guy who has a job and all he cares about is his job and doing good work and making money in the job. He is about so much more than that. And that's what this project that we're going to be talking about is all about. It's basically creating a cultural stadium for Chicago. He'll explain it to you. Lou, it's good to see you. It's an honor to talk to you. I mean, you do run the whole Broadway and Chicago gamut. Let me just start, before we get into sort of where you're going to be going with this project, what is the current state of the cultural arts here in Chicago today?
Listen, I think culture is really what defines Chicago in so many different ways. The state of culture in the city is, I would say, is we are, our trajectory is in the right direction, but can it be accelerated? Absolutely. And that's part of what this is about. This is really about not only celebrating culture in Chicago, but it's helping the rest of the country and rest of the world understand the power of culture in this city.
One of the points you preach is that Chicago now has already been transformed into the third most important city in the world for theater. I'm assuming number one and two, New York and London?
New York and London. And that's commercial theater.
Yeah.
Commercial theater. Yeah.
Because I would make an argument that we should beat New York. We'll save that for another day.
I make an argument that there is no other city in the world like Chicago for theater with the 220 theaters that make up the League of Chicago Theaters. We're just the ones that are loud and make a lot of noises.
Exactly. And it's not just about with all due respect, the big Broadway theaters that we have downtown. There's
Absolutely.
So much more here. Let me talk to you about team culture. Where did this impetus start to say, we need to take everything to the next level and do it in a big way and not like, oh, let's open a new theater over here?
It really started a year ago last March. I've sat in a lot of seats around the city. I was on the executive committee for Choose Chicago for a number of years and treasurer there for an extended period of time. I headed up the CLA, the was board chair there, and the SSA number one. I've sat in these positions. I understand where the money comes from. I understand who controls the issues. And how they're resolved. And I was sitting back after COVID and reflecting on the sports stadiums, the conversations that were out there. And I was, Lightfoot had me on the team to reimagine the museum campus. But to a large degree, it was really about understanding the sports stadium, understanding the Bears and how we could do some things that not only would support the museum campus, but would enhance the Bears' opportunity at Soldier Field. So you put that in the back of my mind. The Sox Park is getting close to, within a couple of years of diffusing that its debt. And their position is, if we don't get a new stadium, we're going to either sell the team or contemplate something very different. And at the same time, Laura Ricketts, God bless her, buys a women's soccer team and decides she wants municipal funding for that. And I take the position that I am not opposed to sports stadiums at all, but they don't make economic sense. And I've worked on two of them around the country. Major cities like Chicago, we need these sports stadiums. We should have these sports stadiums, but don't pretend it's about the economics. And in my op-ed, I said, let's take Broadway in Chicago as a small piece of the economics in this city, a small piece of culture in this city. I said, if Broadway in Chicago does 1,700,000 to 1,800,000 people, And we throw off what is in tune to about $700-800 million in economic output to the city and state. If we're going to think about stadiums, you compare just Broadway in Chicago to the Bears, That's two sold out Bears years that Broadway in Chicago does in 1 year. And so I take the position ultimately, if we're going to be considering stadiums, there's another stadium to consider, and it's a cultural stadium.
And what you're saying, just so people understand, is when you say that this is not, it's one thing to talk about Bears Stadium or Wrigley Field or something like that. For you, the downtown area is the Chicago Stadium, right? I mean,
I see in our entire downtown as a cultural stadium with all of the assets that sit in the stadium, but we have systemic problems that, downtown isn't seen as everyone's downtown. We need to change that. McKinsey did a report coming out of COVID looking at what they considered three troubled downtowns, Chicago being one of them. And they took the position, and it didn't take the geniuses at McKinsey that you find there to come up with their first conclusions, that the sooner a city can react, the quicker the city responds and the less it's going to cost. But the big aha for me in their analysis is the recommendation that everyone rally around a North Star. And to me, that North Star is culture, because culture is our differentiator from our competitive set for tourism. And it's the reason people come to Chicago. And it's ultimately culture is what makes us us. And if we can figure out how to transition downtown and it where it's everyone's downtown, we've changed the game forever.
make a point, for example, the mayor who's very concerned about the west side, the south side, as well he should be, but there's also the north side. And the great part about downtown is it feeds everybody. Everybody ends up in that downtown area. It's important to note too, you are no first time comer to this rodeo. If we can go back about what, 33 years or so, you were one of the owners of Poplar Creek. And you had an experience back then that taught you what a grandiose vision can turn out to be.
Well, it's there's a story. I haven't come out from behind the curtain, which is where I live my life, for some 33 years, until Cranes threw down the gauntlet and said it's been 20 years since Millennium Park. Now what? Well, that really tied to this effort is why I tell this story now. We had 307. I built Poplar Creek Music Theater in Hoffman Estates, and several others around the country. And operated those. I was a concert promoter for the first half of my career. We had 375 acres that Sears decided when they moved out of Sears Tower, they wanted for their New World headquarters. The state had aligned with them, and the money was crazy money, and we took the money and closed Poplar Creek. But I spent what turned out to be over a year researching, looking at site after site, and doing the testing that needs to go into one of these facilities. And I found the site that I thought was ideal. And I thought I had the right political alignment with me. And those of you that know the history and the people in Chicago, when Daley was in office, Jerry Joyce. Jerry Joyce was my political shepherd. And I went to Jerry and I said to Jerry, I've got a location. And I showed him the location. And he said, we need to go see Mayor Daley. So we go in to see Daley. And I have renderings and studies. And I'm talking to him about the proposal. I said, I want to do a public-private partnership. And here's what I want to do. And I showed it to him. And he said, I love it. Let's do it. And so, from then on, I go through off the fifth floor, meeting with the minions, Daley's minions, and I get response after response, not the most positive responses. It's too intense a use. We can't do this. We can't do that. And then nobody in City Hall tells you no. They just don't return calls, and you can't get meetings. That's the signal. And so about 8 months goes by. We're hearing nothing, goes silent. So I said to Jerry, what do we do? He said, let's go back in and see Mayor Daley. We go back in. I love it. We've got to do it. And the response, or the lack of response to the from the minions was quicker, really a cold shoulder very quickly. About 10 months goes by after that, and we'd heard nothing. And then there's a full page in the Tribune announcing Millennium Park. And I don't know if Jerry called me or I called him, but he said, we have a meeting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock at Manny's with Ed Bedore and Tim Degnan, two very high level people in Daly's team. And I show up, and you know, and I'm ready for fire as I sit down at the table, and Ed Bedore says, Lou, you should be absolutely thrilled. And I said, well, tell me how thrilled I should be. He said, your project's happening. He said, but let me tell you the story. He said, Richie comes to me and says, we need a big capital project for the Millennium. He said, I didn't have anything to tell him. He said, I go away that weekend. I come back on Monday and I see your pile sitting on my floor, 2 feet tall. And he said, that's it. That's what we're going to do. So feel good. Your project's happening. I didn't have the vision to think at that time you could plank over railroad tracks. But I had laid out Millennium Park. I had put a legitimate theater on the back spine of the theater itself. And it was designed to be operated as a for-profit facility, a public-private partnership. But that was the first piece. And so the reason I tell this story now, there were two things that transformed our downtown dramatically in recent history. One was the theater district 25 years ago. The second was Millennium Park 20 years ago. And my position is it's now time for culture to do it all over again.
Lou, I don't have to tell you the famous words of Daniel Burnham, who created the plan for the city of Chicago, which were, make no little plans. They have no magic to stir men's blood, and women's blood, of course, as well, he would have meant. That being said, when you look at what it is you want to do, this is not about a new theater here and a new building over here. Talk about the grand vision, because your vision is everywhere we go downtown, we see cultural stadium.
Well, the position I take is there's no pride of authorship or ownership in this. This is a movement. This is a collective. This is something that I think we need to do and should be doing. But it's a Millennium Park level of an effort, but it's not centralized on any one location. It's looking at it as our entire downtown and without hard lines on how we talk about downtown itself.
So we want to go down. We have a river here. We've got the river and we have a river walk. And you thought as one concept, rather than saying, yes, we should have people look at that river walk. If you don't mind me going there, you have a rubber ducky that might take us down that river walk.
You know, everybody knows of that little rubber duck that sat in the tub with you when you were kids. And it kind of brings back that little memory in your head when you see the thing. But this duck is a little bit different. This one's about 80 feet tall. And I see in the spring of the year, our bridge is opening. And a tugboat pulls this duck down to the end of the river, to the Wolf Point, to right at the end of the Riverwalk. And you might say, why is a stupid giant yellow duck sitting on the river? Well, to me, it's people may have heard we've got a Riverwalk. They haven't looked down. Most of them haven't looked down from Upper Wacker to see it. And fewer have gone down there. I'm not saying the Riverwalk's not doing well, but I guarantee you see this duck's head sticking up above Upper Wacker when you drive by. You're not only going to look down there, you're going to go down there. And from my perspective, that becomes an Instagram moment from Chicago seen around the world. And the little magic in this stupid duck is it sits on our river that differentiates Chicago from the rest of the world. With our incredible architecture as the backdrop, it tells a story. It tells a story of spring, of the awakening, of kids celebrating something as crazy as a rubber duck. But it's also the story about our river and about our architecture. And it's a conversation about Chicago heard around the world.
And I know you see visions of, you know, the barge going down. Maybe it's a farmer's market. I mean, there's so many different things that can happen. Let me talk about lighting for a bit. You're no new person to lighting as well. I think the reason we have the lighting on the merchandise mart is thanks to your efforts, right? And I know you are familiar with what other cities around the world have done. But from everything I know about this project, lighting is going to be key and dramatic throughout the city to what you have planned.
Lighting is key to anything we can do and anyone who engages lighting the right way. We commissioned Boston Consulting Group a number of years ago from a tourism perspective, and we were ranking all of the top 12 ideas we had for tourism, for changing the game then. And one of the things that we saw that ranked incredibly high is number one was lighting. Anytime we can align lighting with something, the value of that something goes up dramatically. And anytime we can align lighting and water together, it just shoots way up. Incredibly important. So any place we can put lighting, we put lighting. And that started with the back wall of the merchandise mart.
Are cultural flavors changing? I mean, opera, ballet, aren't there? I mean, over the decades, the centuries in the city, is there an interest in opera the way there was a year ago, or ballet, or is it more today about Broadway and other things, or all of it?
I think everybody's taste changes over time, but one of the things that's most incredible about culture, it's not like building a building that's static and that's the only thing it does. Culture adapts to the interest of the audience. And the shows on Broadway, the ballets that take place, they change over time to target that audience. We see buying patterns changing. Subscription audiences are not buying the way they bought, but the daily sales are higher than they've been previously. So there's a change in those dynamics, in part that's brought on not only by the aging audience goers that came on the subscription side, but also what COVID did. It's like, why should I plan 6 months or 12 months or 8 months out? I'm going to go when I'm ready to go.
And as a result of COVID, we're seeing a lot of the business buildings on LaSalle Street, for example, vacant. I mean, the business is gone. People are working from home. The world has changed when it comes to business, but you look at those buildings and you see a reinvention there.
Well, I see it as an opportunity. I see it as a necessity. We've got to do something in those spaces, even on a temporary basis. And from our position, one of the ways we start to transition how downtown is felt is we take a number of those vacant spaces and we turn them into artist residency programs. We give it away to an artist. You have a 12-month residency where you work, where you can call downtown that place where I go to work. You can come out of the neighborhood, but downtown is where I do my work. That starts to change that game.
When you talk about that, I think of the treehouse resident. I mean, I think there are models for some of these things we've seen in the city over its history.
There are a number of models, and there's incredible models around the country. And you look at the effort in Lower Manhattan that's been going on along these lines as one of the models we follow, that has been doing these for over 15 years in these residency programs and continues to do it.
I know you think of many of the alleyways, and some are very important to you, but with the Chicago Theater, the Goodman Theater, these little alleyways, which right now some people are afraid to walk down, yet these can be areas, and I think of alleys in Memphis, for example, where they invite you down. You see puppets, you see all sorts of possibility.
The Belt in Detroit is just that. It's an alleyway in downtown Detroit, but it's now on the destination of list of the must-see places to visit for visitors in Detroit. We have alleys in Chicago. Most cities don't have alleys, but if we think about how to utilize those alleys, those become an opportunity in expanding the public realm, and we're working in those directions right now.
And I've seen some of the visions of the puppets. I mean, you think about things from The Lion King. I mean, you don't mean little puppets, although Avenue Q puppets are cute, but you know, they can be. I'd like to add Milky White from Company into that. But you see, again, something that invites kids. It's family. It's everybody is enjoying these things, and often with themes.
It's, you know, you see, today's tourists are experiential collectors. You want to turn the corner and see something you've never envisioned, you've never seen before in your life. And if we can do that to kids, if we can do that to families in this city, that's rewarding to them. They feel that difference. They celebrate what this stuff is about. And culture drives that entire mission.
In Sydney, Australia, where they've worked with lighting, of course, to light it up now, it's a key thing. And in going there, there's the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And while that got built around 1909, as you probably know, many decades later, you can now do what's called the bridge climb. And I've done it, and it's terrifying, but you cross the bridge. Are you thinking about projects like that in Chicago, which bring tourists, bring people in to have that kind of experience? Who would take a bridge and say, we're going to climb on top of it and climb over? And yet they do, and they line up.
Who would think that Lower Wacker could be an urban festival site? We're looking at all of these opportunities at locations very differently. Who would think that a section of the Pedway at 8 o'clock at night could be turned into a digital experience of light and sound? There are ways of thinking about these spaces that we have very differently if we give it that time.
So when things like NASCAR and stadiums like Wrigley bring in Paul McCartney, those kinds of things, and now just recently announced, as you know, the McCormick Mansion will apparently going to become a dinner magic venue. These are elements, these are pieces of a puzzle, but do you look at that and say, yes, that's what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. That this is the thing I'm talking about. No pride of ownership or authorship. Anything that comes into our downtown, we start thinking about as a collective in a cultural stadium. And one of the things we're thinking hard about is zoning, is how do we create a cultural district? How do we bait the hook to get the developers to do those incredibly magical things that they do, be rewarded for it, but tie a piece of that to culture as well?
How do people get involved? People watching this right now and say, I want to be a part of this. I want to learn about this. What can they do?
CulturalStadium.com. You've got an opportunity to see some of the visioning that's going on with the project. You can respond on the website. You can give us your feedback. You can tell us what you like. You can tell us what you hate. And you can tell us, more importantly, the ideas you have and how you'd like to engage.
Like there's an alley between the Goodman and the Chicago Theater. I think you have control over that, right? And you're looking for ideas from people to help you design that space.
We are working on Poetry Way next to the Chicago Theater, and we're looking at Theater Way between State Street and Dearborn behind the Niederlander Theater.
How long is this going to take? Are we around when this vision is reaches its peak?
Its peak, I couldn't tell you where its peak is because it will be infinite. But I can tell you that within the next 2 to 3 and 4 years, we're going to start feeling this thing powerful.
I love it because I want to see it in my lifetime and your lifetime while we're enjoying. I have some ideas for that alleyway, so we'll talk about cash prizes for down the line. Lou Raisin, President and CEO of Broadway in Chicago. Thank you not just for doing what you do for Broadway, which I love passionately, but for having this vision for a city. It's so critical. We need visionaries. You are part of the culture team, and I thank you for sharing that vision here. This is just the first of many visits we're going to take to that. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody for watching us here on Behind the Curtain. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.